Hey, I'm Sean.
And I'm Clayton, and we're men who like movies. Two queer men who love movies and love talking about movies. And after a lot of urging, we started a podcast. Sean, what did you make me watch this week? Like, seriously, what was this?
So I really wanted to make you watch the, let's just call it the equal sequel of Rocky Horror Picture Show called
The Equal Sequel.
Yeah, they call it more of an equal is what they say, because as I'll get into it, there's a lot of changes, but the spirit feels a lot of the same. Called Shock Treatment, and I just find this movie so much fun. It's a movie that's really grown on me, because the first time I watched it I was like, and then the second time I watched it I was like, okay. And then the third time I watched it, I was like, okay, I love it. So it's a movie that's really like grown on me. And I got really lucky. You know me, I'm from the Midwest. So I have to tell you, I got it for a bargain. It was $5 in a movie bin.
I hope it was a bargain.
Don't be rude. no, it's, I just have a ton of fun with this movie. I think it's just a lot of fun, good music. I actually enjoy some of the music in this more than I do Rocky Horror, but like it's kind of something, it's just something that's not as well known. But yeah, I just wanted to make you talk about it. That's why we're doing it today. But we're not alone today. We do have a special guest, a special returning guest. We've got Joshua Conkle, TV writer, filmmaker, and host of the Bloodhouse podcast. Podcast. Josh, hey. Thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure. I love this movie.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad you love it. And I am sorry that I messed up your introduction.
That's all right. I don't care.
I apparently do not have the brain capacity to talk, apparently.
No, that's all right.
Which is sad, because we're on a podcast.
We're on a podcast.
Talking is important, Sean.
Yes, I will work on that. But what's your relationship with this film? Kind of walk us through it.
Yeah, so I became a huge fan of Rocky Horror Picture Show in the seventh grade, which was 1994, and I remember it very well because it was the 20th anniversary of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and it was played on Halloween night on VH1, and it was the first time it had ever been played on television, so I just happened to see it and like sort of fell in love with it. I didn't love it at first. I thought, I don't know what this is, but I was really into musicals because I was a little gay boy. And but very quickly I became absolutely obsessed with it, and it became my entire life. And then about a year and a half later, I came home from junior high and put on Cinemax or something like that, and it was right at the scene where they performed the song Shock Treatment, and I was like, oh, that looks like Richard O'Brien. Oh, that looks like Patricia Quinn. This song is really cool. I wonder what this is. And so all the voices were so familiar too. It just was so, mm-hmm. It was such a strange experience. So I looked it up in the newspaper because it was 1995 and it said Shock Treatment. And so I had to like get on the slow moving internet and figure out what Shock Treatment was. I had never heard of it. I wanted to see the whole movie, so I called video stores around my county, and there was a video store like 45 minutes away that had a VHS of it, so I made my mom drive me there and watch it. I illegally recorded it from one VHS player to another, the way that you used to be able to do in the 90s. And I very quickly liked it more than Rocky Horror Picture Show, because I like the aesthetic more. I like the chic, you know, Robert Nagel 80s aesthetic of this. Mm-hmm. I like new wave and punk music more than I like 70s glam rock. I'm a big fan of this movie. It's the one I return to more often than Rocky Horror. I mean, I've seen Rocky Horror Picture Show probably 150 times. So this is no shade on Rocky Horror, a movie that I love. But I love the people that are involved with this movie. I love their voices. I love this music. I love this aesthetic. I've grown to really appreciate how weird this is. And, you know, there was probably a time when I was younger, I was like, I wish this had a story that was more followable. And yeah. I no longer feel that way. So I just, yeah, I'm a really big fan of this.
Yeah, no, and I completely agree. And I used to, So in a neighboring town, they had Rocky Horror. They used to have Rocky Horror every Saturday. And so I used to go every weekend for like almost a year and a half straight, I think it was. I never was on the cast because I just didn't have the time to devote to it. But I was friends with the people in the cast, or some of the people in the cast. And so it was just, it's just always such a fun camaraderie in Rocky Horror. So when I heard about Shock Treatment, I was immediately like, oh, I need to find this. And of course, that DVD is like hard to find.
Yeah, like, the Arrow video release from a few years ago, they did a really beautiful restoration. It goes for like $150.
I know. I saw it and I was like, well, I missed the boat on that one, but at least I still have my $5 DVD.
Yeah.
Like I'm like, at least it's somewhere, because it is not streaming anywhere. Like it is in, like it was hard to find. And I'm not gonna lie, we may have found a copy for Clayton that may have not been the most legitimate of means for him to watch it.
And I wouldn't have paid a nickel more.
Oh my gosh, you're gonna be so mean.
Sean, you love Rocky Horror more than I do. I, as you know, because we've been friends forever, I love the first two thirds of Rocky Horror deeply. And then it just goes off the rails for me. But I really enjoy it. You know, it's an icon. Great thing. Like its music, for the most part. I knew this existed. Had never watched it until now. And I hated it. I didn't think any of it worked. I didn't think its music was fun. Like, basically the only, and I told you this off mic, the only thing I had nice to say about it was I really like Patricia Quinn.
She's so beautiful in this movie.
Oh, she's so good in this. And just her look, just the way she looks at things. I love, like, she'll look at Bird or she'll look at Cosmo. I love it. But I kind of get where you're coming from, because the first time I watched this, I wasn't in the I hate it bus, but I was like, like, and it took me a minute, and I was like, okay, I've got to watch it again. So I waited like a week and I watched it again, because I, of course, had it on DVD. And the second time I watched
it, you gotta get your $5 worth.
Oh, absolutely. This was worth the $5 and more to me. But I ended up watching it again, and I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I'm feeling it more now. And it's, I watched it again and I was like, oh, I am solid in the love category of this. I think it's a ton of fun. And I think if you, not that you ever will, because let's face it, you hold grudges. If you gave it another chance, I think you'd enjoy it more. But
this isn't the type of thing I would like change my mind on. It's not like, I'm not really sure like why it didn't work for me or anything. And like even Rocky Horror, like, I didn't know how I felt about that the first time. Like, it took a couple times, but it wasn't like visceral like this was, where it was just like, oh, I hate everything about this. Like, famously, Sean, the movie that I hate the most that you have shown me so far is
Big Trouble in Little China.
Big Trouble in Little China. And I told you today.
Oh, I love that movie.
I know, Joshua. He has no taste.
So I was sober. I was sober for Big Trouble. And I think weed would have helped that day. But I told you, because you were like, well, watch it again. See if you like Shock Treatment better the second time. And I was like, Sean, I had a marvelous date last night. I got my penis touched. I'm stoned. It's 420. I am in the best mood of my life. And I felt this strongly. And I said, I would rather sit down and immediately spend my free afternoon watching Big Trouble in Little China again, a film that I really aggressively hated, than ever watching another minute of Shock Treatment.
Here's the thing. Like, I was previously on your Dark Crystal episode. Like, if I knew in advance that either of you didn't like Dark Crystal, I would not be on the podcast. With this, this is a really weird movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand how divisive this movie is. It's like not as offensive if somebody doesn't like this movie to me, because it just is so strange. And I think it's kind of an acquired taste. Like, I had the same experience as you, Sean, where I wasn't sure about this at all at first, although I loved the title song Shock Treatment, because I love punk and new wave music. So I was like, what is this? This is so rad. But it took me many, many times to love this movie. And the only reason I watched it that many times is I was so hooked on Rocky Horror and all these performances, and like wanted more of their voices, frankly. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it was really an acquired taste for me.
Yeah.
And something that a lot of people know, and I have gotten better about this, 80s stuff doesn't always work for me. Like, the 80s music, I don't like. I'd rather have the 70s music. So, like, even that part, which I'm like, even if something is really bonkers, I'm pretty easy sell with a musical, honestly.
Oh, I love 80s music. I love the 80s in general. It's probably my favorite decade.
Sean also loves them. You guys can be besties and watch 80s movies.
I'm absolutely fine with that, Josh.
grown to appreciate them a lot more in the past couple years. I've started watching more of them. But
when were you born? Can I ask you that?
1988. End of 1988.
Okay.
So it's not like I don't know, just something about the whole vibe of the 80s for the most part. I've never bonded with it, you know?
I love all decades. I just like, I'm somebody who's like sort of in love with the past, but I do love the music of the 80s. I think it's so interesting and arty farty, and just, it was kind of a chic decade in a way that the 70s weren't in some ways for me.
Oh, I just find the 80s incredibly gauche. I don't know. It's fine. A lot of people love the 80s. I am happy they do. Like, I'm much more like, I love the 90s. And the 70s are fun. The 80s, I love those decades too. It's a lot of hairspray. It's a lot of really bad fashion.
It is interesting to compare these movies by decades, because this is a very 80s movie in that it's far more conservative than Rocky Horror Picture Show is in mm-hmm. some ways. You know
Which
what
is
I mean?
Probably why I don't like it as much. It's far less transgressive. Like,
it's much, so much less of, transgressive.
So much of Rocky Horror, I don't think, would work as much if it wasn't so in your face transgressive. Like, nobody would care about it. But the fact that it's so confrontational and everything, it's just kind of shocking in a really naughty way that's fun. And I think if this had that going for it, I probably would have liked it better.
I think that this is transgressive formally, though. Like, it is messing with format, and, you know, like, it's transgressive in its own way, but politically, yeah, not as transgressive as the 70s.
I would also say
it is an affront to storytelling. I agree, but
no, that's not what I said.
But it's also, it is kind of transgressive in the fact of its prescience, too, because this really did, you know, like, there was a film before this that kind of, like, really called reality TV, but this was a big precursor of it. And also, like, a lot of the amount of, like, the lengths that people would go to become famous, or what they would do to become famous, who would they walk on, who would they would leave behind. Mm-hmm. And I think this is very prescient in that. And in some ways it feels more conservative, but it also feels like this could almost be, like, it wouldn't be, but it feels like it'd almost be made with the politics of now, which
it's
I think
true.
Is kind of also terrifying.
And that also makes it, like, a really interesting, I don't know, touchstone, or what's the word I'm looking for? It makes it a really interesting relic of film history, because it's prescient completely by accident, really. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it was not their intention to see the future or to protect reality television. It happened by accident. And so that makes it kind of fascinating, too. Yeah.
It's like The Simpsons, where, like, they just keep predicting weird stuff.
No,
and I'm
the
like,
The Simpsons,
oh my God,
was written by a time traveler, Sean.
Yeah. Really. Like, somebody's just like, make that joke. I promise in 20 years it's going to be really funny.
The other thing I have to say about this movie, I don't know if we're going to get into, like, beat by beat of this, but I think Jessica Harper is an astonishing singer, and I like her so much more than Susan Sarandon in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
She is I will give her that. She is a far better singer than Susan Sarandon.
She's one of my favorite
I just don't
singers.
Like the song she's given to sing, but I did really enjoy her voice. I was like, man, I wish she was in, like, a musical I enjoyed better.
Well, I was just going to ask
very
you,
striking
Clayton,
sound.
If you've seen Phantom of the Paradise.
She has not.
Oh, she's the star of that, and she's really wonderful.
Yes. Yeah, the only things I have seen Jessica Harper in are Suspiria, mm-hmm. and now this. What
also,
a range.
I plan on scheduling that for the podcast. Can I pencil you in on that one, Josh? Do
sure.
You like Phantom
I love
of
that
Paradise?
Movie. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, 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 I love it.
Okay, I'm writing that down. No, but I know Clayton hasn't seen it, so she's also in that one, and she's given I think you'd enjoy the songs more.
That one's also Argento, right?
Yeah,
No, it's Brian De Palma who directed Carrie.
Yeah. I couldn't remember who did it.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's another one of those that I watched it once and I was like, oh, I liked it. And then I watched it again. And I was like, oh, I love it.
Ooh, Brian De Palma would be a really good fit with her. I feel like she's got the right vibe for him. Sweet.
Mm-hmm. It works. Yeah, it absolutely does work.
I am cautiously optimistic for this possible future episode.
Yeah, because it's another one of the musicals that Clayton hasn't seen, so I want to get it. I want to kind of get it into him. Alrighty, but yeah, so it sounds like Josh, you would definitely recommend this, but Clayton, it sounds like not so much.
I would recommend this to someone that I loathe.
I would say I would qualify that. I would not recommend this to anybody. It would have to be like a very specific kind of person. And it's a movie that I love, but I also understand how divisive it is. And so I would just have to know a little bit about that person's taste. And, you know, it's not one I'm like immediately recommending.
Right. No, yeah. I completely get that. And I will definitely agree with you. It's not a movie for everybody. I thought it might be a movie for Clayton, and I was wrong.
Like, I just went and saw Sasquatch Sunset, and that was 90 minutes of dialogue-free Sasquatches running around with their dicks hanging out and defecating on the road and squirting boob juice everywhere.
I'm so curious about that movie. I keep seeing the trailer.
Oh, it is not for everyone, but I thought it was surprisingly tender. I wrote a review. I'll send it to you.
Great.
I enjoyed that far more than this, and it was extremely experimental and absolutely not for everyone. Your mileage will vary with it.
Well, like, I don't know about you guys, but I'm a very adventurous movie watcher, and I want movies that are either like really arty-farty, five-star Criterion kind of movies, or I want a piece of garbage, weird, transgressive B-horror movie. I want almost no three-star commercial movies. Like, I don't like anything that is like normal and in the middle. I want some kind of something off the beaten path.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like, I normally would say, like, you know, the weirder the better. I'm glad it exists. I'm glad people put the faith in this project, you know, for X, whatever, strange idea, you know, the people put faith in that and will make original things. This is one of those that I'm just like, this exists. Wow. Okay. but yeah, original ideas make these movies. Someone will like them, clearly. Like, I was glanced on Letterboxd when I rated this and logged it, and like, it's average. I was shocked. I was shocked at how high the Letterboxd average is for this and how many people that I really respect their opinions seem to really appreciate this movie. So, you know, just didn't work for me, and that's fine. That's okay.
That's
not
okay.
All media is for everyone.
That's very true. But are you guys ready to get into it?
Yes, sure. Please.
Alrighty. So this was Shock Treatment was directed by Jim Sharman, who of course directed Rocky Horror Picture Show, and written by Richard O'Brien and Jim Sharman, who Richard O'Brien, of course, is the creator of the Rocky Horror Show and the Rocky Horror Picture Show, with music by Richard Hartley, who also did Rocky Horror, and songs by Richard O'Brien. So for production history. So following the unexpected and overwhelming success of Rocky Horror Picture Show on the Midnight Circuit, O'Brien approached producer Michael White with the idea of a sequel. The first iteration was called called Rocky Horror Shows His Heels, with Frank and Rocky being resurrected, Brad and Dr. Scott now lovers, and Janet is pregnant with Frank's baby. But Jim Sherman was hesitant. Well,
that sounds amazing.
But Jim Sherman was hesitant to revisit the material, and Tim Curry had no desire to reprise his role as Frank. So O'Brien took the songs he had already written and revised the story. Which, there's one song in this, and I'm like, this is absolutely Rocky's song. And it's the song sang by, like, the Oscar Drill and the Bits. Oh, and I'm like,
that's favorite song.
I love that song so much. And I'm like, that's so Rocky's song.
I enjoyed that song. I did. I enjoyed that one.
It's just like a good old garage rock punk song, and I just love it.
Yes, I love that one. That's one of my absolute favorites of this movie. The new script was called The Brad and Janet Show, which is closer to the film version of Shock Treatment, but was also fraught with problems. Jonathan Adams refused to reprise his role as Dr. Scott, and production's plan to shoot on location in Denton, Texas, fizzled out due to the 1980 SAG strike. So with only a small window of opportunity for the cast and crew, creativity was needed. Because television had been a heavy motif in the script, production designer Brian Thompson came up with the idea to rework the story and have it set in a giant TV studio, utilizing a film studio in England, which helped shave $1 million off the budget. The final draft changed the locations to the film studio, and Dr. Scott's character was morphed into Bert Schnick. Many Rocky Horror cast members returned, but only Jeremy Newsom reprises his role as Ralph Hapchat.
Good old Ralph.
Surprisingly good singer. Good for you, Jeremy Newsom. Patricia Quinn frequently remarked that she could not get a grasp on the story, but after the release of The Truman Show in 1998, O'Brien called her, listing the similarities in the films, which made a light bulb go off for her, and she finally understood. So I love the fact that she waited.
I have the deepest empathy for actors that have to work with materials. They're just like, I don't get this, but I've got to do my thing.
I think of that all the time because I'm a TV writer. So, but like, if I watch a bad movie, I'm like, somebody waited there to do their part. They like waited for someone to call action patiently and like had to do this on camera.
And it's so funny because she's talking about Bert Humphreys, who plays Bert Schnick. And she said while they were filming, she was in one of the like documentaries on the DVD. She's like, he asked me, like, do you know what's going on here? And she's like, he's a very intelligent man, but I didn't know what was going on either. On its release, Shock Treatment was dismissed by Rocky Horror enthusiasts, put off by the recasting of the leads and the lack of Tim Curry. So fair. This wasn't really embraced at first, but it is starting to become a little bit more embraced now. I do think it has a little bit.
It
more
has a cult
following.
Of its own.
Yeah, it's a very different cult, but it's still got a cult. For nearly a decade, beginning in the mid 2000s, director Benji Sparing tried to convince O'Brien to give him the rights to produce a stage musical, which opened in 2015 at a small theater to match the origins of Rocky Horror Show. It utilized more of the Brad and Janet Show script than Shock Treatment, including an actual Shock Treatment, apparently. I was not there for it.
Yeah.
because it was on the West End. I'm not entirely sure.
I know that theater that it was in London. It's a physically small theater, but it's quite an important theater. I mean, culturally, it's like Steppenwolf in Chicago or something like that. You know, it's a theater of some renown.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was gonna say I couldn't find anything about how it did, but it just sounds fun.
Yeah.
So, and then of course O'Brien did write a rough script for a direct sequel to Rocky Horror, titled Return of the Old Queen, which would have had Brad's brother Steve seeking revenge on the aliens after Brad becomes a Las Vegas go-go dancer and falls to his death wearing only 6-inch heels and a rhinestone choker.
See, all of these other ideas sound so much better than what we got. Look, I want to see that movie.
It would also feature Sonny, the illegitimate son of Janet and Frank, an heir to the throne of transsexual. The script never made it past early draft stages, but has been shared on many fan sites.
That sounds
amazing. No notes.
I do want to read this script. I feel like it'd be so much fun. And at least you could, I'm one of those people that like if a project doesn't get made, like, let me have the script so I can imagine it in my head. I want to see where you would have gone with it. But yeah, that was pretty much all I had for production. Just to get into the cast, I mean, this is actually a pretty big cast. We've got Jessica Harper, who plays Janet
Majors. So many characters.
I know.
Yeah, there are a lot of characters.
Jessica Harper, of course, best known for Suspiria and Phantom of the Paradise. Susan Sarandon's star was on the rise, and she demanded more money than the script allowed. So she was not brought back. Auditions were held at the Roxy, and Jessica Harper impressed with her singing skills and was given the role.
All of Janet's songs in the Rocky Horror Picture Show are written for an alto. Like, if you listen to one of the soundtracks from the play, it's a woman who sounds like Jessica Harper, because all of those songs are meant for someone with a deep voice. That's part of why Susan Sarandon's voice is so thin in that movie.
Yeah. I love when they don't just bother changing the key, you know?
Yeah.
God forbid we make this easier on the performer. And, you know, the audience's ears.
I'm surprised they didn't dub her, to be honest. Like, Susan Sarandon's really good, but it is kind of surprising. Yeah,
she's very charming in the role, but...
Yeah, like, it's kind of surprising they didn't dub her. Like, they were still kind of doing that at this time.
Yeah.
I mean, they just did that for The Greatest Showman, so, like, it still happened. Oh, my God, yeah.
Well, I mean, but it just doesn't feel as much. Like, usually they try and get... They try and get the singer to sing. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Marty Nixon probably died. You know, she can only do so many voices.
Well, they needed an alto for it, not another soprano. Sorry, Marty. All right,
that has been soprano. Sorry.
Thank you so much, Paris Hilton.
You're welcome.
Cliff DeYoung is playing a dual role of Brad Majors and Farley Flavors. And DeYoung was actually Charmin's original choice for Brad in Rocky Horror. But DeYoung was in a TV series and was unable to appear. After learning that Barry Boswick was unable to participate, Charmin tracked down DeYoung and gave him the role of Brad.
Barry Boswick is such a good Brad. Yeah, I mean, he's so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like Cliff DeYoung a lot.
Great character actor.
Yeah, I don't know. I was gonna say,
we didn't get to see him in Tidy Whitey's like we did,
Barry Boswick.
Barry Boswick. Yeah. So it's hard to truly judge them, you know. But
yeah, I was gonna say, if I have to choose which one to watch fall off fall wearing only a 6-inch heels and a choker, I'm gonna have to pick Barry Boswick. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Cliff DeYoung. But that's just me. DeYoung modeled his performance of Brad on David Eisenhower and Farley after Jack Nicholson, which makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
Richard O'Brien plays Dr. Cosmo McKinley. Patricia Quinn is Dr. Nation McKinley. Little Nell, or Nell Campbell, as Nurse Anselong, who is like... Clayton was telling me earlier when we were talking about it a little bit. He asked if she was in Grease because she looks just like the peppy girl.
Preppy cheerleader. She does look exactly like that.
Yes.
She absolutely does.
Because like, I'd only ever seen her like in Rocky Horror, you know, when she was very like, covered up in that. And so at the beginning of the notes, because Sean like taking notes and I was watching it, and I was like, is that her? And then later he referred to her as Little Nell, and I'm like, oh, well, was Little Nell in Grease? And Sean's like, no, they just look alike.
Yeah.
Literally thought that, it was her.
That trio of Richard O'Brien, Patricia Quinn, and Little Nell is why I love both of these movies so much. I love them together. Yeah, I have all of her records. Little Nell had some pop records in the late 70s, early 80s. I have all of those on vinyl. I'm just like a big fan of all three of them.
They just have so much charisma, like the three of them, like they have oodles of charisma, like, and unfortunately she's not given as much to do in this one, it doesn't feel like she gets as big of a part, but like she really does, like every time she's on screen I'm like, I wish she was in this more, like I want her to have a bigger role, but I'm happy with what we got, especially with her just like baby doll voice. I love it.
Yeah, it's the best.
We've got Charles Gray as Judge Oliver Wright, Barry Humphreys as Bert Schnick, Ruby Wax as Betty Hapshot, also known as Betty Monroe in the first movie.
She's fabulous.
Yes. Love
nice
Betty.
And then Betty Monroe had
we've got Jeremy Newsom as Ralph Hapshot and Rick Mayall as Rest Home Ricky. I could name the parents, but the parents,
they don't really rank, but some of those other people do, like Rick Mayall is most famous probably for being Drop Dead Fred or being in The Young Ones. Who else? Ruby Wax. Oh, a lot of these people were on Absolutely Fabulous, which is weird. I don't think there's any connection really except for all of these people being in that sitcom in the 90s. That's what I was gonna say. Barry Humphries is Dame Edna, the drag queen.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
It's just such a great cast. Like, I just have fun with these characters. Like, I think Bert is so funny.
They are very game. Like, the cast is very game.
Yeah.
And Betty, you know, Ruby Wax is Betty. Like, I just find her so much fun. Like, yeah. Every time she talks to Ralph, she's just like, shove it. Like, he's awful.
I mean, that's how breakups feel. You know?
I know. That was literally my note. And I was like, this is how breakups actually feel. Like, yeah.
I'm divorced. I know all about it. I mean, that's exactly the way I feel about my ex-husband. Yeah.
You're just like, every time you see him, you're like, shove it.
I mean, he recently moved to Los Angeles from New York, and it feels like I have Michael Myers living in my neighborhood. Like, he could pop up any time. Oh my God. You know, I live in dread.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Like, horrifying. One of those, like, you're at the grocery store and he's just like standing there, and you're like, dude, in your head, all you hear is the Halloween theme.
Yeah, he's like standing behind some sheets that are blowing in the wind. Yeah,
exactly. You're like looking out a window and he's just like,
yeah,
there. I hope that doesn't happen. I'm not putting that out in the universe. Yeah, sorry. Thank you. But yeah, that was all I had for cast. You ready to get into the movie a bit?
Yeah, let's go.
Sure. Oh.
Alrighty. So we start off with a little bit of voiceover telling us about a fast guy, a real fast guy with his life was fast, his friends were fast, even his food was fast. But he wants to share his fast philosophy with someone else, a beautiful girl. Trouble was, she was in the arms of another man.
Tale as old as time.
And we're introduced to Denton, the home of happiness, which is basically the entire town of Denton is been turned into a TV studio. And I do really love this opening tracking shot that just kind of like takes you all over to the different like worlds that it creates, like different idea. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. you see the Denton dossier, you see parts of, you know, Marriage Maze, and you're seeing all these places that are would be a location in another film, and it also shows the people working behind the scenes of it.
I just think these TV shows suck. They should have had the TV shows from the Stepford Wives remake. I can do better.
Ooh, how dare you? By the way, how dare you like the Stepford Wives remake and not this? You have a lot of nerve showing up here today touting anything about that movie and then being shady about this movie. How dare you?
Because of those films has Glenn Close acting like a washing machine.
It's like I'm the worst movie that she's ever been in besides Hillbilly Elegy. It's like that in Hillbilly Elegy.
I'm not gonna lie, you said that and I sat back a little bit because I was, you know, the meme of the kid holding the like cup of like the mug and is steaming. Yeah. He's just like got that self-satisfied smirk.
Sean, you love the Stepford Wives more than I do, so that's really more.
Oh, I do. I know. Absolutely. I mean, but
Glenn
Close
is like Maggie Smith at this point. Like, she'll show up. You just have to pay her.
I also.
You know? She'll be in a dog food commercial.
Be
to give her
the first person to agree that the Stepford Wives remake
is trash.
Absolutely
it's so
awful. But I find it extremely entertaining.
Yeah. We just have so much fun with it. That's our biggest thing. It's like,
okay. We have an episode. Go listen to it, listeners, if you haven't. It's great.
You also mentioned it somehow on the Dark Crystal episode that I was on. So I guess you guys really do love it.
It's one of our, like, it's one of our movies, like, the two of us. Like, no one else loves it.
If I ever felt guilty about anything, I would say it's a guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, we try not to feel guilty on it. But, like, it's just one of those where we know it's bad, but, like, it's ours.
Yeah.
Like, I just have fun with the moments that
Nicole Kidman came to Stepford for magic, okay? Like,
which is how those women are still alive. Magic.
Are they robots? Are they murdered? Who can say?
Yeah, nobody knows. But yeah, let's get back to Denton.
Brad made it from Wish. Okay.
This is not Brad and Janet from Wish. This is Brad and Janet in another universe. But we do have Brad and Janet coming in, do looking a little bit different, though. And we start off with our opening number of Denton, USA, which also the opening line of this literally makes me laugh every time, which is the you'll find happy hearts and smiling faces and tolerance for the ethnic races in Denton. And I'm like, oh my God, oh no.
So the guy who plays the cop is the original Brad from the play in London. And he is also Safi's dad on Absolutely Fabulous.
Oh, my God. He also had a marvelous voice.
Yeah, great voice. And very handsome when he was young.
I didn't even realize that was Safi's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You're absolutely right. Okay. I didn't even put that together. I should have once you said AbFab, though. I love AbFab.
Ruby Wax is on AbFab as well. And a couple of other people in here were, I think, at different points.
And I think she was actually a writer on it, too, or like an editor.
Oh, maybe something like that. Yeah.
I don't remember exactly, but I remember seeing her name on it a couple times. But yeah. And also another fun fact. One of the three, the one in the middle of the three servicemen in the audience is actually the original Rocky.
Oh, yeah. I
remember Rocky.
That.
Rocky. but yeah, so we start off with our opening number, which I think is fun. And I love seeing that Brad just has no rhythm whatsoever when he's trying to clap with them. Yeah, absolutely tracks. And we're introduced to Betty Hapshatt and Judge Wright, where they have a show called Denton Dossier, or she has a show. I think he's just guesting, but it sounds like
he's a guest. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I love how he basically tells us exactly what Farley's going to do in this movie right here, because she goes, are you one who, when they're done with their happy song about, you know, America, conservative American values in Denton, she goes, are you perhaps one of those amongst us who feel this emotive form of presentation is overly manipulative? And he goes, well, Betty, there are many ways the spider can catch the fly. And he sells monetary inducements, extortion, seduction, blackmail, prejudice, and lies, which are all things that he'll use to try and get Janet.
And the whole audience is asleep.
Yep, exactly. And then we are to our first commercial with introducing a little bit our Farley Flavors Fabulous Fast Five, which also is it just me, or does his logo kind of look like a swastika?
Or it looks a lot like a swastika, yes.
It's giving fascism, like, for sure.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm like, I was getting it from it, and I was like, I really hope somebody else got that, because I'm just like, maybe I've watched Indiana Jones too many times.
No, it was definitely swastika-ish.
Yes. And then we learn from Betty that she has since their marriage in the first movie separated from Ralph. And she is
now maturity is something she looks for in a man.
Yes. And we're introduced for a second to Neely Pritt, who is I would almost call her bubbly kind of personality, with a documentary on Farley and kind of news crew. It's kind of hard.
Yeah,
what
she's
Neely
making
does.
She's a producer of a documentary, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And I also love Betty's little when Betty's like, everything's free there. After that, I'm just like, oh, I'm on Betty's team no matter what happens.
Absolutely,
Betty's such a fucking cunt. I love it.
We're introduced to Bert Schnick, the host of Marriage Maze. We see one more time he introduces Macy Struthers and Ralph Hapshatt, and Macy and Ralph are together now. And this is another one of Betty's great lines: is the weaker the man, the dumber the blonde. just 10 out of 10, no notes.
I do love Macy Struthers. I mean, she's like a drag character, basically. She's really fun.
I love how she just kind of like pops up everywhere. in this movie. Like, she's just always randomly showing up of her stuff. And that's one of the things I love about this is, like, this is one of those networks where you're like, oh, it's kind of like the Grey's Anatomy of now. Like, Grey's Anatomy and that one, what is that one show? Like, it's the firefighter show. I don't know. It's the spinoff of it. I love Grey's Anatomy, but anything else, I'm not usually. But it's like how those characters will like pop into each other's shows every once in a while. That's how I feel like this entire show, like town is now. Everyone totally. Just kind of like everyone just shows up for a special guest starring role.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Brad and Janet are then chosen for Marriage Maze, even though Judge Wright says that Brad and Janet Majors are an ideal couple. More than anyone else in Denton, they represent the old values, and Ike would have been proud of them.
Not if you'd seen what they got up to in the last movie.
Exactly.
Yep. And we learn from... oh my god, I keep wanting to call her Susan, and I'm like, no, it's not Susan. Susan's the last movie. And we've got Janet saying that Brad's an emotional cripple, and I love his little nervous laughter here when he's like...
Audience participation is literally the worst. Drag me into one of those things.
Yeah. Well, one of the things is you know, as we learn later in the movie, they're trying to drag Brad and Janet down and enough for them to like accept the plot that's going on, basically. So Bert is just literally instigating all this shit. Yeah, plot.
Also, by the way, everyone who worked on this movie is right. It doesn't actually make any sense. If you scratch at it even a little bit, you're like, why? For what? What? How does this make sense? Like, why do they? Do you know what I mean? But that's okay. I don't mind.
It's like complete dream logic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, they also reveal everything too late, which I think doesn't help. Like,
yeah.
One of the things is you're just like, why the hell is any of this happening? Like, and then of course Brad has his glasses and he's like gagged the whole movie. See, like the first time I watched it, I didn't realize that Farley and
Brad were the same person. Absolutely not.
So like it, because they have different hair, there's just different style. So I didn't realize, because I went in completely blind. I was just like, until they got to the song, I was like, oh, okay. I get it more now.
I also think that Brad is gross and Farley is hot. Is that weird?
No, absolutely. No, you're 150% with you. Like, Brad just looks like he doesn't try anymore.
I don't like a man with too many morals.
Well, we didn't make him for you. But yes, so I completely agree with you there. But yes, so they end up sending Brad to what's called Denton Vale in the rest home at Denton Vale for him to get a complete checkup with some neuro specialists. And end up, this is when we lead into our next song, which is Bitchin' in the Kitchen, which
this
I think
is kind of fun, I guess.
It's so stupid and fun. I think it's
like
so
literally had nothing to say. Like, it didn't advance the plot, like nothing, but it was kind of a fun little, like, I could see this getting stuck in my head if I ever was going to listen to this again.
It gets stuck in my head sometimes, and I do think it moves you get into Janet's psychology a little bit, and it's like comparing the mundanity of TV commercials to her marriage.
And exactly.
I think it's fun. I like it. I'm sticking up for it.
No, and I completely agree with you. I think this is a little bit of, I don't think it's a critique on American consumerism, but I do think it's using American consumerism.
You're giving this far too much credit, Sean.
No, I know. I'm not. And I know that it's not really, like, but it is something that, like, they acknowledge Richard O'Brien was talking about. Like, is this something, you know, like, is it, like, is this going, like, am I going to give this a deep, deep, deep critical analysis? No. Like, but there is a thought process behind it, because he's not critiquing it, but he's at least bringing it up.
I think he is critiquing it. I mean, I would say that earlier we called this conservative, but I don't actually think it is. I think it's like pointing out the banality of conservative American life in the 1980s and consumerism and, you know, the just Reagan's America. I think it is intentionally doing that.
Can I share an anecdote? Sure. You know, in like English lit and stuff, when you're studying the meanings of stories and what the author was probably trying to say. I don't know if you happened to catch HBO's recent miniseries starring Kate Winslet, The Regime. There is a late in the season thing where they're sitting in like a poetry building, and she's like, they're just stuck there. She's reading this and she's like, it's a totally pointless genre. 83 pages about a fucking pussy willow. And I just wonder if all these meanings we assign to things, and we're like, yeah, the author was really, really deep and digging into all of these ideas, and maybe they were just writing 83 pages about a pussy willow, you know?
Well, maybe. That's okay, too, though. I think it's all part of the fun.
Yeah, like, you can always find... It's finding things that you love about it. And if that's something that speaks to you, absolutely. Like, do I think that everyone meant something? Like, do I think that Jane Austen was just like, I can't wait for them to pry this apart in 200 years? Like, you know, no, I don't. Not all of them, at least. You know, it's very much, you also take, it's you putting your ideas into the art as well. So I agree with you, though, because every time I wrote a paper in high school, I was just like, did this idiot actually think this, or did we just deciding this? And I was like, oh my God, like, thank you for making me read Wuthering Heights, which, sorry, I'm not a big fan if anybody loves Wuthering Heights.
I do love Wuthering Heights, but
I've never read it, but I have it literally sitting next to my recliner when I have a moment.
I found the character so whiny. I was just like, no, I can't do this. Maybe I'd give it more of a chance now. But at the time, I was just like, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. It was a
Wuthering Heights is for next summer, Sean. You got to get through the OC first. So, you know.
Yeah, I know. I'm working on it. I'm on episode 5. BS. So after bitching in the kitchen, Brad is committed, and we go to Denton Vale, and we meet Doctors Cosmo and Nation McKinley, who love Patricia Quinn in this so much. She's just beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous. That red hair, like, her red hair is always like fantastic, but just that, like, the green with her, like, she looks incredible.
Yeah, I mean, the movie is very chic. It's giving like 80s yuppie, it's giving Nagel print, it's giving Duran Duran. It is like moneyed 1980s, and I think it's really cool.
Definitely. But yes, so they are trying to get Brad to be committed, which also, how does he not notice being pricked with this needle?
I don't know. Like, I genuinely don't know. That is a just freakishly like, large needle, like, to have zero like, reaction to.
I guess it's, if we're saying he's kind of like emotionally dead, maybe he's just like not feeling anything, I guess. But yeah. I don't know. That was my thought process on it. And so Janet does not sign the contract because Nurse Anselong, played by Little Nell, ends up telling her to sign the contract tomorrow so you get the first day free.
But really, she's doing her a solid, right? She's like,
honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's trying to warn her in a subtle way.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think she's trying to warn her, or is she just like, I do. Get the first day?
I think she's a good guy, sort of under the surface, in that she's like trying to warn Janet a little bit. That's always been my read.
That was gotcha. My read. And my one and only watch.
But I also think this movie, again, it doesn't make any sense. So you're free to imprint any any interpretations you want onto the story, yeah, which I think is natural.
I took her as complete face value. So she's just like, you get the first day free. Like,
yeah, know? It could be. Like, you could totally be right.
Because she's a model. So she's just like, oh, you know, I came from the model shop. Oh, you get the first day free if you don't sign up, you know? Like,
yeah.
You know? Like, so I just took it, especially because at the end she ends up joining them, which I would have really happy if she drove off with them. But, you know, she kind of sticks around. But it's a job. A job's a job, I guess. We are then cut to Janet's parents, who were in the opening song, and they are, again, on Marriage Maze, guessing what's wrong with Brad, and they guess infantile regression, which is correct and happens so to be funny. Cosmo and Nation's specialty. I love the mom.
she's hilarious. I mean, they're both looks, really funny.
Yes.
The parents
she just
were
looks
funny.
Insane.
See, I gave it a compliment.
Thank you, Peyton.
Yes, but now Jessica, so we head over to Jessica Harper's great voice on In My Own Way, where she reveals that despite her unhappiness with Brad, she does love him. At least loves him still.
Yeah.
And also, the mom bites the bites like thread off twice in this movie, and it drives me insane because every time I'm like, I feel like I'm watching a shark chomp a child. like literally, she just like... I don't know why.
Thing to be upset by.
There are just things in life that just I'm not like upset by it, but it's one of those things that just every time I watch it, I'm like, I don't know why it just sticks in my craw. But yeah, so we are heading over to Happy Homes, which was I was gonna say I forget her parents' names. They're Emily and
honestly, who cares?
Who cares? Her parents have won a trip over to a happy home, which is basically just a home on a set, so they could show on TV. Her mom has made her a dress, and she goes, "Who?" And her dad asks, "Who she got to look pretty for?" Pretty for. And she goes, she's got a husband. And
she's got a weirdo.
I've never been able to afford the time to have a nervous breakdown. And
I love that because that is true for sure. That's like having a nervous breakdown is like a privilege for wealthy people. He's not wrong.
I did greatly love the line from her mother. Thank goodness he was born an orphan. This would have killed his parents.
There's a lot of great, honestly, I think kind of fun casual homophobia in this scene.
Casual racism.
Yeah, and racism.
The only time I genuinely laughed out loud was in the song Thank God I'm a Man with the faggots or maggots line. I laughed very hard.
It's really funny. Sorry, I think it's funny.
I like to call it, so we are Thank God I'm a Man, or like I like to call it the toxic masculinity theme song.
It's clever. You can tell that the tone, it's ironic. The movie is being ironic. The movie is judging him harshly. So,
absolutely. And it's judging everyone in the audience too, because they're all kind of like agreeing.
Yeah.
So you can kind of tell that like the people in the audience aren't exactly the, greatest of people. Another thing I like in this movie, it really kind of riffs on both fast food and reality TV, which both were really starting to get into the, the fast food was getting into the throes of like real fast food. And I do like the dad's just like, or who is it? The dad who's like, oh, the entire country's indigestion is being funded. This show is being funded by an entire country's indigestion. No, that was the judge. The judge says that. But I do find that funny. So we learned that everyone loves the girl next door, particularly Farley, which Cosmo, Nation, and Bert are talking about why he has picked Janet. And this is when, right after this is when Ralph and Betty reunite for a minute and we get the shove it, which is also
also alimony is just another word for rape that got a giggle out of me.
But yes, and they are, unfortunately, her show, The Dented Dossier, is now closed. She now fully believes in Judge Wright's conspiracy theory. Next, we have Janet heading to meet with Cosmo, Nation, and Bert. And now Farley has brought in a TV, and Farley sings her a song, seducing her with the idea of becoming a giant star and his way of life.
Any of this make sense? Again, I mean, it doesn't matter, but it's like none of this makes sense at all.
No,
not even really a little bit.
Yeah, it's It's a fun song.
Yeah, like, I didn't hate this song. I mean, I didn't love it. I didn't love any of the songs, but this was one I hated less than a lot of them. It reminded me a little bit of music from Diana the Musical.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
See, Clayton enjoyed that one a lot, too. So,
oh, it was awful. Absolutely dreadful. But I thought it was very, very funny.
Clayton, this one's more for you. When Farley ends the song with "Time's tight, Janet, do it right, Janet, until tomorrow night, Janet," were you?
Yes,
getting,
of course. All I was thinking was a Valentine.
You look great, Kate.
Want to be your mate, Kate? Go on a date, Kate.
You're scary, Gary. Which is, that's something Clayton and I quote a lot, and I was just like, oh, I hope he got that off of
that. Valentine, another movie that's not great, but I like, and I'll say it's not great. I'm not that much of a movie snob. This just didn't work.
That's okay. So Janet is still being kept away from Brad. She's been told that he is harboring deep feelings of hostility towards her, and she thinks it's because she's becoming too popular. Which, I love that. I love that her just like her entire like mentality changes through this movie.
Within like a matter of hours. It's so bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then again, if somebody offers you the world, maybe you would change. Like,
oh, I would absolutely be the biggest monster so fast your head would spin.
Yeah, I can't say I wouldn't be the same. But yeah, so Janet is told she has to stay there tonight, and then we get another song that I do actually really like called Lullaby.
This song's so pretty.
Yeah, I just
really love,
love
this song.
Yeah, me too. We see that Cosmo and Nation, even though they are brother and sister, are playing brother and sister. It's never really told.
Elbow sex. I'm so disappointed.
Yeah. No, but he does have a crop, so we're good there. And
must
we see
Tuesday.
Bert sitting on his bed creepily, which always elicits a laugh from me.
Spends the whole night that way. When they pick him up the next morning, he's still just sitting there.
Yeah, it's just sitting there staring. Another one of my favorite things of this movie is with the gag of like, can Bert see or not? Like, because they do it multiple times where it's like, he could totally be blind, but he could totally be seeing.
He's like faking it.
Yeah. But like, then he has moments like this where, does he just sleep like that? Like, is that really?
Yeah.
Like, nobody's there. Wouldn't you act like nobody was there? But then again, like, he's also on a TV show. So maybe he realizes, like, I have to be on at all times.
Yeah. I love the way this musical number is filmed, too. Just going up and down the line of windows. It's really pretty.
And little Nell finally gets to sing.
Yeah, she's got a great solo in this one.
And everyone is sleeping in the studio, so the town is definitely the town is basically living in an audience. So the next one we go to is after, when they wake up in the morning, they send off Janet to go get a costume fitting with Cosmo, and we get Little Black Dress, which I love Little Black Dress a lot. This is one of my favorite songs of this one. It's just literally whenever I'm up with scissors, I'm like snip snip snip. I have to. But yes, this one I think is so much fun, especially the second verse where Bert just like pops out and he's just like talking about caviar, like for no reason. Like there's literally no reason for him to be talking about caviar, but it just works.
Again, I'll just point you to Diana the Musical. The song "The Dress" is a better example of this. fuck you dress. Anyway, the dress is fabulous though.
Yes,
looks great.
And so now Janet is ready for her big debut as a big star, and her next song is "The Me of Me," which I do also really like. "The Me of Me."
I really like this one. I think this is the most aggressively 80s sounding song.
Yes. Agree.
But
very
I like 80s
aggressively
music, so.
80s. I didn't enjoy it because it's very 80s, but I appreciated the pipes on Jessica Harper.
She's got a great voice. And the sentiment of the song is very 80s, too. It's like the, you know, the boomers were in their 30s and rich all of a sudden. And it was all, it's like a very individualistic, selfish, greedy, you know, greed is good decade. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's very in that milieu.
Absolutely. And I just, watching Jessica Harper just like tear this set apart with like Farley just like basically orgasming watching it, I just find it so funny. After this, she's basically praised by everyone because of course she does kill it, killed the set too, but that's a different story.
As us gays say, she served cunt.
Yeah, right. She did.
This is another thing that kind of leads into your the greed is good. It's out of self came selflessness. Even though that was completely not selfless at all, that was just selfishness. We are basically following her parents over to Dentonvale, where the parents are wondering what is going on with Brad. And we get one of my favorite lines in this is, hi, mommy. Hi, daddy. Hi, Brad. I've just come to tell you how fabulous I am. Like, what a line. Good for you, Janet. she's on.
It was amazing.
She's just on at this moment.
It's very amazing.
This is the moment when I first turned into the movie, too, in the 90s when I first saw it. So I was like, what is this movie with all these people that I love and this cool sounding song?
Yes. And now we're at shock treatments.
It really was reminding me of like the beginning of Wicked. Like, it's nice to see me, isn't it?
Yes, but we are essentially Janet's parents are questioning why he's been trussed up like a turkey.
there are drugs to keep him quiet.
But they say they use them all, and then they do their snake oil salesman song of shock treatment, in which they
love
pretend.
The song.
I do too.
This is my favorite.
It's a hard time for me to pick, but I would definitely say this is at least in my top three, if not the top for me too.
It's just a great new wave kind of punk sound. And there's actually a version, it's at the end of the movie, but it's not on any of the soundtracks, that Richard O'Brien sings alone. So it plays more like a pop song. And I really like that version.
It has backing vocals by Little Nell. Yes. But yeah, I agree. Oh, pardon me. I like that version as well. And also, I like how they're kind of warning Brad, like, don't blow your last resistor on a sister that'll certify you. Like, she'll put you in the mental hospital.
It's like, women be crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And they miraculously cure Bert's blindness by just taking off his glasses and opening some shades. So that definitely works. And we learned that Janet is going to be representing Farley Flavor's new show, Faith Factory, which is supposed to be for sanity for today, which also kind of does fit themes now. It's like, I feel like mental health wasn't as talked about in the 80s.
I'm far more sane, and he's only been here for a day.
Yes.
But I think this movie is really prescient also in the way that it links mental health to vanity, because I feel like we have constant, never-ending sort of fake conversations about mental health now that are sort of like, here's how I can talk about myself nonstop. I'm an undiagnosed whatever. You know, people diagnose themselves with mental illnesses so they can just constantly talk about themselves and excuse all their shitty behavior.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. I've never told anyone this, but I think I have body dysmorphia.
Oh my gosh.
I really loved Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Bodies.
I really love that movie so much.
Agreed. And then we learn how much of a monster that Janet has become. And I love her.
I've got
her.
A lot going for me, you know. I'm going places. I'm going to be someone. I'm going to win my way into the hearts and lives of the people, even if I have to kill to do it. I'll make the pathetic little crumbs love me. Just monstrous.
And one of my favorite moments of this is when, like, Cosmo,
Janet,
and Nation,
you said that
look
aloud.
At each other. Yeah. One of my favorite moments is when Nation and Cosmo just kind of look at each other incredulously, like, what the hell is going on with her?
What did we do? Yeah.
But yeah, so essentially, even though she's now a big star, Nation still drugs her and knocks her out. And another thing that's always weird to me in this movie is Nation eating that lemon off of her leg. Ugh, it's just so weird.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm just like, that's on her leg. Like, you don't know her.
Yeah. I wanted to start making a list of just, like, random things that weird you out.
That was one of them.
We didn't talk about the weirdest part of this movie, though, when the audience has fallen asleep and the cop comes in and he's like, does this bird belong to you? And he's holding a dead bird. It's like, what?
Yes.
What is happening in this moment?
Yeah. And Betty just screams. Like, I honestly have no idea what that does with the rest of the movie. Like,
no
what
idea
is
what that moment means. I have no idea what's happening. I just don't understand on any level.
Dream logic.
It feels like AI wrote it or something. Yeah, it's like, yeah. I don't know what this is.
And Ruby Wax has a fantastic scream, but, like, I have no reason. There's no reason it's at all. We're now in basically Janet's dreams, and she's singing the song Looking for Trade. And where she's basically wanting to trade her humdrum life for something more glamorous. When she wakes up, she's talking to the band again and says, if you have any friends, you won't have them soon, realizing the price of fame.
And promptly passes back out.
Our next song is Look What I Did to My Id, which is basically anyone who's a personality on the show. So we've got Nation and Cosmo. We've got Ralph and Macy. And we've got Nurse Anselong and Ricky, and they're all singing about how they may look like phony medics, but they got their looks from a book from Fredericks.
This did have possibly my favorite moment in the entire movie, when they're trying to get her to take pills, and she's just like, amateurs, and just tips her head back and just shoves a handful of pills in her mouth.
Down Janet's mouth, yep. We learn that Cosmo and Nation
are the worst
actors.
Of the people. Character actors?
Yes.
Character actors.
And then we get to Oscar Drill and the Bits is Breaking Out.
AKA
which is
the best song in the movie.
I love the band. I love these kids.
Yes.
And that's that's a great band name, Oscar Drill and the Bits.
It is. It's truly a great punk band. They really are a good punk band.
And I love that the kids are the ones that realize, like, what's going on isn't kosher. Like, it's not real. You know, it's kind of nice to see, like, the youth are the ones that figure this out fastest.
Yeah.
But this is the song I'm just like, oh, they wrote this for Rocky and just repurposed it.
When I was, like, 13 watching this movie, I thought Oscar Drill was so cute because I loved this kind of music. I loved, like, alternative rock, and I was just like, oh, one day I'll have a boyfriend like that. Never did. Never had, like, a cool
there's still
boyfriend.
Time.
Yeah. I was really into him.
He is a cutie.
Now I'm like, he looks 15.
Oh, yeah.
At the time, I was like, he's really cute.
Oh, yes. But now Janet meets Farley and immediately recognizes him to look just like her husband Brad. And we learn that Brad and Farley are twin brothers who were separated after their parents died in a car accident. And Brad went to the uptown adoption and Farley went to the downtown adoption.
I love that Farley is so jealous of him. And I honestly would say Farley has it better.
The better life. Yeah. I think it's more of he's just jealous that Brad was given more opportunities. Like, it feels like Farley had to really work for what he's gotten.
Like, what does Brad have? He has a wife that he married too young.
A wife
he's
that
boring. He's got, you know, the picket fence, like, not unhappily married. Farley's rich. He's got, like, everything he wants. Like,
yeah.
Really?
Well, also, I guess at the end of the day, Farley did all of this just to get Janet, which is very flattering if you're Janet, but also it doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, there are other things you can do with your life.
Yeah. I think it's honestly, well, I don't know. Maybe he's just bitter. Like, he had all the opportunities and he ends up that. Like, the Brad yeah. that we get in this movie is like a boring, emotional cripple, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like he's not a person, he's barely a character in this. Like,
you know what I would have really enjoyed about for Farley,
what
is if they had like really poorly edited inserts when we find out the story and it like edits very badly Farley into like scenes of Brad and Janet's wedding and stuff. Oh my God. From Rocky yeah. Horror looking on in anger from behind a tree or something.
That would be fantastic, and I love that.
Like, that would have pushed this movie over the line from like awful to just like, oh my God, this is kind of amazing.
But yes, so Judge Wright and Betty rescue Brad, and Janet is crowned Miss Mental Health.
Janet and I have that in common.
I love it. Irony. But yes, and I also love this little fake out with the ladies and gentlemen, the president. And Neely's just like, the president is here. And it's the president of Lapsy Autos who gives Janet a almost brand new convertible whose keys Cosmo immediately takes. And yeah. they're talking about sanity and vanity, which I thought was fun when you mentioned that earlier, because that yeah. is something that they mention. Brad makes an entrance crashing through a giant poster of Janet, and they reveal the ruse of he was trying to take Janet to get revenge for his twin having a better life. And then we get the dual duet.
Yeah.
Yawn.
Yeah.
Jeez.
This is not my favorite song.
It's not my favorite either, but I do. It's fine. You know, I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I don't know. It just doesn't work as well for me than the rest of the film. So one of my biggest letdowns.
So you can imagine how I felt about it. I'll just leave that there.
And I do love how crazy Farley looks, but it doesn't feel like the climax of this film kind of fizzles a little bit for me, because there's not mm-hmm. really a big there's no catharsis to this really. There's no. a little bit, but it's kind of like it happens too quickly for anything to feel like it mattered, which also makes sense for reality TV, so I guess that works.
Yeah, true.
Maybe that's why this didn't work for me, because you know I also famously like hate reality television.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say because I famously love catharsis.
Honestly, he probably does.
Who doesn't? I do love when the camera pulls up and you see the set from a bird's eye view, and like everyone is in straight jackets, and like I think that's like a pretty chilling shot.
Agreed.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. And we get to the another thing before we get to that, when Farley ends up kissing Macy and you just or Marcy and you just watch Ralph's face just like drop, and then he immediately puts his smile back on, and I'm just yeah, like,
because he's fake showbiz as fuck. Yeah, he and Macy are fakes.
Yep. And also her Janet's parents being like, she let us down. I find so funny. But yeah, so they are. So
it's just like Janet, you spent the whole movie being worried about Brad and what's going on with Brad, and then you didn't like what Janet was doing, and now you're just like, oh, she let us down. I'm like, people, make up your fucking mind. Who wrote this script?
Well, but that's the whole thing. It's all fake outrage. It's just like,
yeah, they're
anything
all swept
else.
Up and. Yeah, the drama.
They, you know, like they're looking like the caring, you know, parents-in-law, like, but they don't actually care. They don't even care about her. Like they end up going with the rest of them because like fame is what matters to the two of them. They are big
it's
TV
all about
stars,
status and they, how people see you.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So
I think I'm putting a finger on why this didn't work for me after growing up in the church. And how much I just fucking hate hypocrisy and just like everything being about how others see you and looking like you're doing the right thing and all that. I think maybe that was just like an element of this that just hit that age old thing inside me that just turns blind rage on.
Kind of a huge element of the 80s in general, to be honest.
So honest, like that tracks. So
yeah.
Wow. Thanks for the therapy, guys. Oh my God,
I was going to say, Josh, thank you so much, because I think you might have just opened up an entire breakthrough for Clayton. But yes, so our final song is Anyhow, and they are essentially saying they're going to do the right thing no matter what, including for each other. And the band, Janet, Brad, Judd Wright, and Betty drive off into the sunset. And that is the end of the movie.
That's it. Yeah.
I do. I really enjoy this film. I think it's a fun little, and it's very prescient. I know it was an accident, but it really did really call reality TV and like the lengths that people really would go to gain celebrity, or once they get that celebrity, what they'll do to keep it.
Yeah, and I don't think that it, I do think it's an accident, but I don't think that that matters. At the end, mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't make it less interesting or, yeah.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you there. And like you said earlier, does this movie make sense 100% of the time? No, not even close.
Not like, at all. Not even like, 75% of the time. Yeah.
Not even at all.
I go into this and I'm just like, oh, this is like what it like. This is just a fever dream of a film. Like, I'm just here to have fun and watch this. Like you said, Clayton, I think it is almost dream logic. Like, this is somebody's wacky Broadway nightmare. And
but I would rather have that. Give me that. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a professional screenwriter and I'm tired of movies that I feel like I'm sitting in this movie watching it and I feel like I can see the screenwriter's note cards on their bulletin board. Like, I can see their outline. And
that's
Hollywood
how I felt during the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
The whole film industry has just gotten more and more formulaic, and there's these like guru books like Save the Cat and shit like that. And it's just like, movies can't be done by formula. You can feel it. Like, I would rather have a movie that's really shaggy and weird and dreamy like this with no structure than like the 50th Marvel movie that is made by a committee.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I completely
normally agree. I would agree.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you're absolutely right. And that's one thing I noticed, I agree with you on, is the formula. Like, I'm just tired of the formula. Like, I'm a person that loves to be surprised by movies, and I'm insane. So, like, I'm one of those people that when I watch a movie, I have to figure out where the plot is going. But, like...
So, Sean, the first time you watched this, did you figure out where the plot was?
I had no idea where this was going. This is a movie that I literally was watching and I was like, I have no idea what's going to happen. Like,
it's like,
this
you know, there's all these like dorks on the internet who suddenly don't like sex scenes and don't want there to be sex scenes. And first of all, it's very disheartening that that's coming from young people.
Oh, I know.
But second of all, they're always like, it doesn't move the plot forward. It's like, who gives a shit? Like, not every single moment has to move the plot forward. Yeah. Like, let the movie take a break sometimes. Like, let's cut away to something else.
Some of us like watching hot celebrities pretend to have sex. Like, it's just a
100%.
Deal.
I don't need it to move
Z.
the plot forward. I don't care. I mean, just give me boobs and dicks and I'm happy. I don't need, it doesn't have to serve the story at all.
Yeah. And well, and that's the thing is like, that's also, it's a scary thought because that pushes us farther into repression of sex. And you know, like
Sex? What?
I know, but like, we don't need another Hays Code. Like, I don't want that. I don't want films
That's
to become
the thing. Listen, like, every day Gen Z gets on Twitter and tries to reinvent the Hays Code, and I'm like, what is going on?
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, sex
Josh, you're gonna make my eyes twitch.
Yeah, sex is a part of life, and I think that people really, especially the younger generation, are forgetting that, or they're more scared of it, which I mean, I understand.
I was afraid of sex when I was a virgin too. I think a lot of them are just virgins. They're just like not having sex like we all did.
You're just a virgin who can't drive.
But that's true. That's who all of Gen Z is. They're all virgins who can't drive. They're afraid of everything. It's so crazy. Sorry to like your Gen Z listeners.
I take pot shots all the time. It's fine.
Okay.
No, he really does. But it does, it does get a little scary sometimes when I do see the like, oh, no nudity, no sex. Like, those are parts of life. Like, those make us human. And
we didn't consent to see this.
Well, you yes, consented did, to watch was on the film.
Yeah, you did push play on it.
But enough about Gen Z's weird issue with sex. Did either of you have any final thoughts? And what would you rate this on Letterboxd? Slash did I you have rate on Letterboxd?
I'm sure it's 5 stars. If not 5, then 4 at the very stingiest.
I completely agree. I'm a 4 as well. And it kind of wavers between a 4 and a 4.5. Today I landed on a solid 4. Just depends on how much fun I'm having. And I always have fun with it. But this today was leaning more towards 4. And Clayton, you gave it a...
What do you think I gave it?
2.
A 2? I gave this a rating that I have only, in the history of me having Letterboxd, have given
you
2 other films.
You gave it half a star.
I gave it half of a star. And for comparison...
You gave it half a star.
The other films that I gave half of a star were Dune from 1984, because it was an incomprehensible mess, and Movie 43, which I greatly love, but also is only worth half of a star.
This is not in that same category of film.
It was to me. I was like, if there was a rating lower than a half that I could accurately log, I probably would have given it. I really hated this, but I love talking about it with you. And Josh, I think you cracked my thing with the 80s. Because... Wow, can't wait to tell my therapist.
It's kind of an echo of the 50s, right? So like Gen Z was born in the 50s, which were so oppressive and conformist, went through the 60s as and then recreated the 50s and the 80s, which they claim to have hated, but then they just recreated it as adults.
Yeah. But I'm sorry, so this is officially the thing I have rated the lowest in the history of this podcast.
Horrible.
I'm sorry. I'm glad it worked for both of you and you love it.
I keep telling you, like I said, the first time I watched it, I had thoughts on it. And I think if you watched it again, maybe you would enjoy it more.
Do we have numbers especially on how this movie did?
I could not find a box office for this. I searched multiple sites. I could not find one. I only found the budget at $3.5 million. But I could not find a box office.
This thing cost $3.5 million.
That's a very small budget for a film.
Yeah,
I feel
and
like
they shaved off
like...
a million of it because they shot it all on a soundstage.
Okay,
so originally it was around 4.5 to 5.
Maybe you couldn't find a you couldn't find what it made because nobody went to see it.
Yeah, that
well,
is
nobody
very
did.
True.
It is true, and I think it was a limited release. I don't think it got.
It
like
was.
A...
So I will share on Letterboxd. This has an average of 3.2 out of 5, which I find shocking.
What was it?
3.2 out of 5 is the Letterboxd average.
Well, it's a divisive movie, so there's like a lot of people who really love it and a lot of people who really hate it and not a lot in the middle. So I guess it kind of averages out to 3.
Like, this has a higher average than... Hold on. I need to double check something very, very quickly. But
you're
Letterboxd...
about to name a movie that's not as good as this. I know it.
So for comparison, I Know What You Did Last Summer has a
2.9. This is better than that.
Oh, blasphemy.
Better.
But yeah, I'm just shocked that a movie like this has a higher average than a actual slasher classic. I refuse to listen to slander.
I love that movie. No, I love that movie. It's just a commercial. This is like more of an auteur movie. Like, this has a point of view. It's strange. I think that makes
what
it
what is
special.
The point of view? I don't know. But Josh, What do you have to plug? Yeah. Where can people find you on the socials?
So I have a weekly podcast called Blood House, which is H-A-U-S, where we talk about art house horror movies. And my TV show is coming out. So I'm a writer for a show called Dead Boy Detectives, which is coming to Netflix. When this is out, the show will be up. So please watch Dead Boy Detectives. So my job can sweet. Continue. Yeah.
Hell yeah. I'm so excited. If you want to find, did you say where people can find you on the socials?
I'm on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Instagram at Joshua Conkle.
Cool. If you want to find us on the socials, you can find the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky. Just search Triple M Pod with 3 M's or just Men Who Like Movies. You can find Sean and I on Twitter, Blue Sky, Letterboxd, Serialized. I am at Just Happy to See You, number 2, letter C, letter U. Sean, yours is?
I am Murph the Smurf, M-U-R-P-H-T-H-E-S-M-U-R-P-H.
And if you want to email us anything, our email is menwholikemenwholikemoviespod@gmail.com. And also, check out our Patreon. Mondays, every week, new episodes that you won't find over here. And it's a very reasonably priced. Patreon.com/triplempod with 3 M's. So, normally, this would be where you would ask me on a week like this on one of your choices. But we have a little bit of a change up to the schedule because it is your birthday week. So, Sean, what are we covering for your birthday?
Thank you. So, every year for my birthday, I pick one of my favorites for us to cover. And this year, even though it is definitely the wrong season for it, I
truly a bizarre choice, but it's fine.
But it is my second favorite film of all time, The Thing from 1982. Yes, John Carpenter's absolute classic.
Thankfully, I know I love this one, so yeah. I won't shit on your birthday pick.
Yeah, I would hurt you.
Yeah. I watch The Thing even just for fun, so even without you making me. But yes, talking about that stone cold classic. Literally stone cold because it's very, very cold. Please don't forget to give us a 5-star rate or review if you have time and enjoy this podcast. It helps so much. Don't forget to be kind to people. It's hard out there. It sucks. Doesn't cost anything. Josh, thank you so much for coming to talk with us about this. I hope you don't hate me too much for shitting no, all I over don't. A movie that yes. means so much to you.
Okay. My pleasure.
I liked it. Yeah, you can talk to me about it. I promise. I enjoy it.
Thank you for making the time. We love talking to you.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.
Also, Clayton, you thought you were cool with that little joke earlier, didn't you?
Cool. I did.
Cool.
Yeah. I got it. I get it.
I couldn't resist. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Until next time, everyone. Bye.
Bye.